All right, friends, David Mullins, Robin Black, The Mentality of Combat Sports, and we were going to talk about like one of the biggest stars that's fighting, but we're going to talk about one of the other biggest stars that's fighting. Just so at the time that we're recording this, it's only an hour or two after that announcement was made. TV takes some time. By the time the thingamajigs and the who's it's happen and it gets released, it could be 12 hours, 10 hours, more.
Old news.
Yeah, it could be old news. But Ronda Rousey is fighting at UFC 207, so that's pretty crazy. Thank you for your questions and your comments and all that kind of stuff. We really appreciate it a lot. So Ronda Rousey, did you think she was going to be coming back?
I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I mean, obviously the last few weeks you hear rumblings and you start to know who the right people to listen to for rumblings are. So it looked like she was going to. But I thought first she would for sure, then I thought, no, she won't. And I've been thinking about it, obviously, since it's been announced. And the last time we saw her in a cage, she had been knocked out.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that takes a lot of getting over and coming back, especially for someone like her who is so competitive and has been through
proud.
So much in her life as well.
Yeah.
So everyone's different with the way they deal with things. The immediate comparison that people have made or were making was, well, Conor lost to Nate and he got straight back in there and wanted that fight and wanted that rematch as, you know, quick as he could. Ronda got knocked out, and she waited and waited and waited, and now she's got an easier matchup. This is what's out there kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. Got an easier matchup, and she does have an easier matchup, I think, than Holly Holm in Amanda Nunes. But that's the thinking. But everyone's different with the way they react to these things, and you got to allow for that personality difference and everything in the way she's taken so long to get herself in a position where she's actually excited and ready to come back. And that's what I hope she is. Because the good thing about taking a long break like this is it's not that emotion-based.
Right.
You know, the emotions kind of would have been up and down immediately after a loss. The low of a loss like that is just devastating. And you have to build yourself back up from it. So I'd like to think she has done. And it's kind of, she wants to do this for real, pure reasons now.
I agree, but we don't know all of those answers, and people will speculate. One of the things I'm obsessed with, we talk about it a lot, is the idea of growth, right? So we talk about the mindset of growth, that if you look at somebody who's very good at something, once upon a time they didn't even know how to do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself lets you know that when people work hard on something, they get better at them. But also of change. So I've been thinking a lot about change, and I'll give you an example, television. For some reason, television will start out and people will say, we're here on location at Blue Jays, whatever. Where do they play?
Rogers Stadium.
Rogers. I don't know.
Rogers Stadium.
You've got a Blue Jays hat on. Yeah. That's all I know. I watched the game. It was interesting.
It was interesting.
Yeah, well, they won. So that was cool. It was interesting to watch my friends watch it because there were so many parallels to the way people watch fighting. And that's,
I was at the game.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Here we are at Rogers Stadium today, the home of blah, 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 blah. You know, in a nail biter, we got a yada, yada, yada. And television, it looks a little different. We use different cameras, the outfits. But a lot of it stays exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It becomes ritualistic, despite the fact that that thing, the way that's presented, once meant something different than it does today.
Yeah.
So, and this is true. Once you start looking at change and you're looking at growth, everything changes all the time. And it's really important, whatever you do in life, however your relationships are, whatever your jobs, anything, it's important that you understand that. So anyways, if you start looking for change, you see it everywhere. Technology is a simple example. Once we look at that and you think about what somebody is capable of achieving and change in a year, it's massive.
Yeah.
If they think that way, if they are looking that way, she could be and probably is an entirely different person, not just a fighter, but person. She's been affected by things she sought out to change herself, and she's been affected by things that have just been put to her that she reacted the way she did. But when we are going to talk about – when people are going to talk about Ronda and the matchup, they're going to talk about 2015 Ronda, and we're going to talk about – when people are going to talk about how she thinks – they're going to talk about their perception of how she thought a year ago. Like, so much can have changed.
Yeah, and it should have. I hope it has, because that, you know, that's one of the big things you can get from a loss is it forces you to change. Mm-hmm. You know, because if we do this thing where we go back, because everyone thinks she got knocked out, and she did get knocked out, but she didn't just get knocked out. She was performing really badly in the fight, and she was getting beaten up. So that's what was happening. And before that, she hadn't prepared as well in the build up to the fight. Technically, in terms of how to deal with with what Holly was bringing and to execute her own game, and mentally in terms of her preparation. So all that stuff was happening. And like you've touched on, and you touched on straight after the fight with the Betch-Kahir fight, that she didn't fight a smart fight in that fight. She knocked her out. Didn't perform well, and it was a sloppy kind of performance. Yeah. She knocked her out, and it looked good, and there was a lot of emotion involved. But maybe, again, she got the result, but the performance wasn't great, and maybe the preparation wasn't great. And so this has been something that's been going along for a while. When a loss comes, boom, you got to change things now.
Yeah.
It forces you to change. Where results are going well, you just, most times they just keep riding the wave. Conor against Nate is a perfect example of change after a loss. He was maybe going on that same road, and the loss happened and changed things up completely in terms of preparation.
Weidman talked about feeling shackled to no change because it was what he was winning.
It was working.
And it was the same thing. Weidman's performance against Vitor was pretty bad.
Yeah.
He won, and he finished Vitor. And once he got on top on the ground, it was very good. But just the approach that he took, and it's not just Vitor came out and swarmed him. He didn't start well.
Yeah.
He finished well. So that's great. But so then he lost his next fight against Luke and just didn't perform that well. And he now, you expect massive change. He talked about it immediately. Now he felt a relief that he was now free to go change some things. And really, you should be free to change things always, but you're scared to change the working recipe.
It doesn't need to be a huge, giant change, you know? Like, if you look at the Conor example, what has he changed except some terms of preparation, in terms of making it specific to the opponent? But he's still looking to do his thing in the fight. He's not completely changed himself, and he's not just going to play De La Hiva, it's not that. It's just little adjustments more so than complete change. But Ronda was forced to change now. If she has taken this loss the right way and forced herself to look at what really happened and what can be addressed, whether that's with herself or with the team that she's with or what needs to be changed. Only time will tell what happens there.
And we have touched on what would be some of the preferable ways to deal with a loss, and starting with examining the result, the performance, the preparation, everything, and finding what to attribute these failures to and addressing this.
Start even before that, you start with the emotion of the pain of it. It hurts so bad, a loss like that.
It's terrible.
So you have to allow yourself to get over that and as best you can without riding the momentum of those emotions too far. But, you know, you got to get over that first. It can be devastating, a loss like that.
And it was for her. She talked about it. Yeah. And she's not a great actor. So when you see her say things, it's not like you think, wow, you know, this Oscar-winning actress is lying to us. You're just like, well, it seems real. She's talking about devastation, feeling loss and all those things, being pretty open about it. And then she seemed to just stop being public about anything.
Yeah.
That's a very good sign. That's a very good sign.
I was happy to see her. Like, now that she has reappeared and she's ready to go again, that's a good sign in terms of maybe taking some time to be a bit honest and self-reflect on what's going on. But we'll see what changes, you know, have been done in terms of the preparation, the balance between her MMA career and all the other stuff that she was doing, in terms of whether she changes her team. You know, that's a big question.
I have tried so hard. I don't know why. I tried just trying to take lessons that your mom taught you when you were a kid, but I try not to criticize. If people watch, you know, this show and other things that I do, I don't sit there and try to look for flaws and weaknesses. There are ways to look for, you know, even when breaking down a fighter, I will rarely, oh, they're bad at this, because I'm not in a position to say that, and it's probably not true. It's a negative view. But I've tried not to be critical of her coach, especially because everybody's critical of her coach.
Yeah.
But like you were telling me, Mark Henry's idea of a jab at John Kavanaugh was calling him the Irish Edmund.
Yeah.
You know, once we get to the point that it's publicly, this is other, you know, I mean, and people will have a tendency to be so mean-spirited that kind of thing. So that's unnecessary, and it doesn't make you happy to do. But when we just look fairly objectively, in boxing and kickboxing, like, he doesn't really exist despite the fact that's where he came from. And then if we just look at we've studied fighting for a long time, thousands and thousands of fights and hundreds and hundreds of fighters and dozens of coaches, and analyzed the approach. And I don't think any of them would say having an emotional breakdown in the middle of a – if your coach has a bit of an emotional breakdown in a fight, this will be a good thing. No. And we saw that with the Travis Brown fight.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically was yelling and screaming. And I know there are coaches. I remember Sean Tompkins, who was a good friend – was criticized by another good friend, Joe, in a fight for what he said to Sam Stout. And Sean was like, I know my fighter. I know what he needs, and I know how it works. And Sean was a brilliant coach. So there are exceptions. I mean, Greg Jackson has screamed things at guys, and just the right guy at just the right time.
Yeah.
But this wasn't that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's that thing, like you're saying, of there's that emotional intelligence where they – it looks like they're out of control, but they're actually conscious of what they're doing and aware of it. It's when you're not even conscious of what you're doing and how it's impacting, that's when you got a problem. And I've seen some – I've had some terrible coaches over the years in different sports.
Yeah.
You just don't believe what they're saying. So, like you say, it's not fair to lump on and just, you know, kick a guy when he's down and just join the mob mentality. But when I say about changing team, it'll be interesting to see what way she has reflected on what part that has to play in performances and if changes are made or if loyalty is more important or what, you know, or if she feels like everyone else is wrong. That'll be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. And it'll be an indicator maybe of what changes we can expect to see in terms of performance then as well.
I think it was even this same fighter and this same coach when we discussed this one concept of loyalty. But loyalty can end up being this going from this very great quality to a very harmful quality in a case, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a strange thing to think about, because you should be loyal, but how loyal? Like if your friend harms somebody or, you know, kills something horrible, at what point is loyalty something different? And if your coach sucks, at what point is loyalty just completely?
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like Connor says it a lot about the loyalty to the team people saying a weakness when people move away.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always thought, like, that's easy to say when you happen to live a few miles from SPG growing up and you're surrounded by that team.
Which was just a fluke of where you lived. It's a geographical fluke.
Yeah, there happened to be that right mix of, like, John's an outstanding coach and there's other outstanding coaches in there, and there's this group of young, hungry athletes that, you know, that they're all coming through at the same time, that perfect storm. So there was no need to. But some guys, like, don't have that and nothing like it. So they have no choice but to move.
Yeah.
So then loyalty for the sake of loyalty is a short career at the best of times, the MMA. There is that other side of it where guys chop and change all the time.
Yes.
And then that's not good at all when you start seeing that stuff where guys are – like, it's one thing to be traveling around to different gyms and picking up different things, but it's one thing to be on a different team every different fight. That's a problem.
Well, there has been evidence at different times, and not just fighters, through history, of the Ronin-like approach. It's not – you know, it's not unworkable. It's just rare, and it would be the individual. And some individual who somehow they make meaningful connections without harm, you know, damaging them, and move on to the next one. And the way that they travel through life, but I think it's a unique athlete or a unique person or athlete or whatever. But it has happened, and people have been able to make that work.
Yeah, but there are other people, and this is more common, where they leave a trail of destruction behind them, and they can't go back.
That's right.
You know, and that's not that Ronin lifestyle.
No. When Melvin Gillard leaves the gym, they don't want him back. I don't know why. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure Donald Cerrone or whoever he's trained with would tell you whatever it was. That's different, yeah. But something where there are some people welcome everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, and those ones I think can maybe make it work, but it's something very different to make that work.
Yeah, and in a professional sport like this where you need to have your team around you, and I don't just mean like other guys are fighting. Like there's a team of people that go into a performance and fight night. So if you're constantly chopping and changing, you have to get to rebuild that team again. It's tough. Like there's been loads. Maybe the highest profile example recently is TJ Dillashaw. Like he made that decision for himself. I'm going to grow more as a fighter if I go with Dwayne than sticking with Alpha Male, and that that's a tough decision to have to make, and I'm sure he didn't make that lightly,
and it came with a lot of other things,
and he seems like a really good dude as well,
TJ.
He does. So that's he made that because he knows my career is at the best of times is going to be a short one, and I can maximize my potential or not, and it's that, you know, it's a tough decision to have to make. So that's where loyalty, you know, can kind of cloud things sometimes.
Yeah. Because certain things that we look at as a good trait are not universally good no matter what.
Not all the time.
Not all the time under any circumstances.
Far from it.
The biggest thing let's imagine that we had a year and you or somebody else who is a high level of doing what you do. What have we done in the last 8 months with Rhonda? What could we have grown? And the answer is a lot.
Yeah.
You could become a whole different person in the way you view the world, the way you view fighting, the way you view yourself, what you're capable of. You know, she could be an entirely different thing.
Yeah.
But there's also evidence. Some of her old coaches, when she lost at the World Championships, talked about her really going off the rails after not handling that well. Now, that was that one time. This time, she had that experience to draw from. But all of this, there's a lot of speculation, and there's educated speculation, but it really is speculation. And even when we get to see footage of her training, when we get to see a little insight into what her demeanor is, it'll give us more information as we get closer, but it's still, there's going to be so many unknowns in this one.
Yeah, I've had situations like this with fighters that I've worked with plenty of times, but not like this really, because there hasn't been this long break, you know, like where I've had athletes have devastating losses when I'm working with them, and they didn't just come to me after the loss. I was with them for the loss, you know, in the build up to the fight, and they have this devastating loss, and then they have to kind of figure out what happened and go again. So much of it at the start, if you break down, how long has it been? November, so it's 11 months, right? Since she,
it'll be over a year by the time the fight happens.
Yeah, 13 months or whatever it'll be. First is the emotion of it at the start, and not just letting that go past, because it will just go, but you want to get through it as best you can. So keeping things in perspective off the top is good, and that doesn't mean to downplay the significance of what you're doing and just it's just a fight that doesn't work, but to keep it in perspective and you know what you've still got going for you, because it's still a lot of things, and then to start the attribution of what happened, and getting to like I always say, getting to the truth of it as best you can. And once we figure that out, then it's an action plan of how to improve certain things. It would have been easier to have dealt with, or maybe not to prevent it or whatever, if this had been happening after wins as well. Uh-huh. That's
right.
Obviously what we're saying off the top. But if it's a whole complete restart now and this hadn't been happening before, then we have to go back and review fights before as well. Because it's not just that one fight. There could be clues and things in the previous fights.
I think the worst case scenario for her is she did nothing except take time off. And I don't just mean not training much. It's very possible. People, you know, we're talking about what is the best case scenario. If somebody marks today on their calendar and looks 13 months into the future and says, I'm going to set out to be smarter, more, have better use of my time, lose 20 pounds, or whatever their list is, they 100% can do it and look back at today and go, oh, my God, look what I did. But if they literally do nothing for the next 10 months and then have 10 weeks to get ready, they will have changed nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it stings a little less. You know, I've been taking a break. Oh, man, it's time for me to get back at it. They're going to give me $5 million. Okay, let's do it. I'll get myself in shape. Worst case of all scenarios.
Yeah.
We've addressed it in no way. We haven't got better. We've atrophied to the point with our skills and our abilities to the point that the most we could hope for is to be as good as we were last time.
Get back in shape. Yeah.
I mean, that's the worst case scenario. There's no evidence to say that's the case. And even something – we were talking about this a little off the air, how much non-truth is treated as truth in our society, more than probably 10 and 20 years ago because of the
internet. There's more information out there.
There's more information.
Therefore, there's more misinformation.
Right. But you'll see footage of her on Mitts with Tverdi, and you're like, oh, my God, she looks terrible. Now, that could be 4 years old. It doesn't matter what they say it is or who's claiming. I mean, you know, Connor just got knocked out and his nose is broken and whatever. I mean, people just make stuff up. And there are when you ask yourself why do they make stuff up, there's lots of easily understood reasons. They can make money off it. Clicks equals money. Attention. If you break one story and that's your thing and you got a lot of attention for it, now you feel like you need to break more and all of a sudden you make stuff up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in the world. But so even the things that we see, you have to question all of it. You can't just go, oh, look, I saw her hit Mitts. Oh, my God, she hasn't been training in a year. That could be 4 years old, that footage.
Yeah.
Or misdirection. I'm purposefully looking bad. He released a tape of us looking terrible for any number of strategic reasons.
There could be anything, you know, it really could, because very few people are inside that camp, that setup, and know what's really going on with her. If you're looking at the potential things that have happened since.
Yeah.
One of the big possibilities is she did nothing and now she just, you know, she got herself back in a state where she feels like she wants to go again.
Yeah.
That's a big possibility. Another possibility is she's been training, improving skills, working on, in terms of mentally, what, you know, balancing things out a little better and figuring out how she can balance all this stuff that she has to deal with, all the commitments she has to deal with, making time for, you know, skill improvement and all the rest. That's a possibility as well. Or another possibility is she just kind of done what she would have usually done because she came up with external bullshit excuses as to why she lost.
Yeah, right. Right, and that's, again, these are some of the worst-case scenarios. And the best-case scenario is we're shocked at her skill development. We're shocked at where she's at. We see a different person, and then you're like, wow. Because even just that Ronda Rousey at her best from a couple of years ago, if that's all she could be, that woman can take anyone down and armbar them, and that's still a thing.
Yeah.
And all of those other people that tried to stop that – brought in the best armbar specialist, the best coach.
They knew it was coming.
They knew it was coming. They all did. That, you know, I mean, Alexis Davis knew that throw was coming. You know what I mean? And so even if she's that, this is still the best of the three fights for her, of Misha, who's been environmentally, like, familiar with her twice before and took her further and got better the second time, and you'd expect the same.
Mm.
And Holly Holm, who we don't know that she has any answers for, and is the worst style matchup for her. This is the best of the three.
Yeah.
And it's for the title. And but there, you know, will she answer these questions? Will she pop up and do all this press? And even if she does, has she got to a point where she's decided, I don't need to give people real truths anyways.
Yeah.
I just have to sell fights.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who's been watching this show over since we've been doing it, I'm a huge fan of Ronda. I really am. So I find myself rooting for her big time heading into this fight. I want her to do well. Nothing against Amanda Nunes. I don't know her. But I find myself really hoping that she really performs and does well. But it's not enough, I don't think, to just, I'm going to go back to the old Ronda. there's a few little examples. Jose Aldo against Frankie. Jose had dealt with a completely devastating loss against Conor.
Yeah.
That is similar in terms of like the level of the stage it was on and who she, like it's probably even worse because of who it was that did it to him and how quick it was. Yeah. And he would have had to deal with a lot of emotion after that, and a lot of it was there would have been, like, this is true for any of them, there would have been stages of I'm done, I'm finished, I don't want to do this anymore. There would have been that settles down and then you're ready to get back, and then it's, but he didn't just get back, he improved and changed things up completely, and you know, he
was a different
dominated guy. Frankie, you know, it made him look like completely different levels. And a different guy, different fighter, different, mm-hmm. like, learned
different
a lot
everything.
From that, learned a lot from that experience.
Mark Henry talked about, you know, how shocked he was by it, and he wasn't alone. If anybody says, oh, yeah, that's Aldo's, that was a whole different fighter. And, I mean, in every single way that he expressed the fighting
in
and the
approach.
In 6 months,
by the way, or 7 months, whatever it was.
And I was always an Aldo fan. I always appreciated how special he was, but I could have never seen that coming. Mm-hmm. And neither did Frankie, neither did Mark, neither did anybody. And it really was a complete overhaul. It was exactly the opposite of what you thought he was. He, instead of moving forward with pressure and heavy, he moved back and light. He invited you. He made you chase. It was a whole different thing. And it made you realize that was another one of those lessons in growth and change and whatever. If you approach – and they did. Frankie and Mark approached that fight like you knew what Aldo was. And Aldo wasn't that. They were 100% wrong. They were right 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But they were wrong today. And that's what time and focus and a growth mindset and a plan – I mean if we – if you could look back and you predict the future, 13 months from now, Rhonda, you know what? We're not going to fight for 13 months. They're like, we're going to take that time. You're going to make some money. You're going to do a lot of different things. You're going to take a break. You're going to enjoy your life. You got a new boyfriend. Whatever.
You're going to recover from your serious head trauma as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's another positive in terms of the gap that since the last fight.
Yeah. So we're and that, et cetera, we're going to make a plan. That plan would involve a certain amount of breaks, then certain skill development, and then other areas of growth and how you structure and train, live your life, and all those kinds of things. You could have an incredible change by 13 months. But we don't know if any of that happened.
Yeah. But the Jose Aldo example is half that time nearly.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So a lot can get done. I just. Mm-hmm. It's already happened, though, or hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is now time for, you know, like getting fight ready is a different thing. You know, like this close to the fight, there isn't that much chance to change things now. It's about getting the weight on getting the fitness levels up and the conditioning up and that getting some rounds and getting that sharpness up for fight readiness. Mm-hmm. But the skill development and the changes, that's all already happened. Or it hasn't happened.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty cool way to look at it when you think about it. I mean, we have 11 weeks in which time we can accomplish these basic things about weight management and sharpness and whatever.
Yeah.
But the greatness on the night or the not greatness on the night has already either happened or not happened.
Yeah.
That's very true. And that's a really, really interesting – and the only way you know is we'll know then. Probably.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
We'll get some ideas once you start to see what kind of shape she's in. For years, one of the things you would hear in commentary and stuff is, well, it's not a bodybuilding competition. Yeah, of course it isn't. It's a fight. And people are, it doesn't matter about your body. Well, no. But your body, one of the things it can tell us is how much work you've done.
Look at Conor in the rematch versus the first fight against Nate. Mm-hmm. Same weight, 168 on weigh-in scale. The bodies are very different.
Yeah.
Completely different body,
true.
But it's the same weight.
Look at Frankie Edgar at versus BJ Penn. Now, there is a different weight, but he's the same walking around weight anyways. And look at him now. And you've seen the work of those years. Any great fighter, that's what you should see. So when we see her – And there are people that's like, hey, I'm not in fight shape. And Nick Diaz will sometimes be big, but he's always training. So he's just he's removed one area of sort of his long cardiovascular, although they are always doing some type of aerobic activity. But some of these guys will be bigger or smaller, but it is – that's old school fighter mentality.
But you can compare you can compare the fighter to them – to their best and worst performances and how they looked. You know,
Nate Diaz is a pretty good example. Yeah. His worst performance against RDA.
Yeah, he comes in 12 pounds over or something, right? Yeah. He was huge. Yeah.
Now, also, there are other things that that body shows you. One is your work. And sometimes when you think it gives you evidence of what work they did or didn't do, what you might be seeing, that one of the things that can trick you is maybe it's showing you that they're injured. So which probably means they didn't get to do the work.
Yeah.
But you can – there are things you see. And when we watch the weigh-ins now, they call them the ceremonial weigh-in. Call them whatever you want. But the way that I look at them and the way that I talk about them is think of it as that moment before – if you ever go to the races, the horse races, they trot them out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like my mom – like so I've never – I've been to the horse races only ever – with my family on someone's birthday, and people would bet like $2 or whatever, right? And my mom would be like, oh, that one's got a nice spring in his step. You know, like, and she'd like put 50 cents on him or whatever. But that, there is things you can discern from there.
Yeah.
What kind of state are they in? Oh my God, Vitor doesn't look the same or whatever, right? Yeah. So there's some insight. But so we will get some. If Rhonda's out there and she's not like, if she is in crazy shape, Rhonda, you should be now. Even though she'll still be some pounds up, you'll be able to get physical and visual evidence that she's been working hard.
And hopefully she has done.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
But it's a fascinating fight. It really, really is. It's going to be huge.
It is. It is going to be crazy.
And that's a factor that, like, as much as Amanda Nunes headlined 200, she didn't really because that got handed to her 2 days before the fight.
Yeah.
And you know, she didn't have to do any work, any you know, headlining 200 was never a thing. Point. Now, Amanda Nunes is fighting, defending her title against Ronda Rousey on the New Year's UFC card.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's a huge
She's
never had anything like this before. It's totally different to 200. She didn't. Yeah. I don't view that as headlining 200 in terms of the emotion in the build-up, having to deal with it. It wasn't there.
That's true. Now, one of the things sometimes you see is people just say the things that they've heard before, and you can tell it's just saying. Sometimes that's because they just don't feel like addressing it, and that's the good possible. And sometimes it's just what they say and what they do, and oh man, I'm built for this, and those kinds of cliches. Those ones are trouble. I think. I don't know how long we've been here, but I'm sure we've still got a fair bit of time. It's probably a good time, although there is lots on this, to shift the conversation to the other big fight of Conor and Eddie. Now, and as you know, I am a massive fan of both of these fighters.
Yeah. They're like, probably your two favorite fighters.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you could include a Swanson and you know, a Condit, and there's not many others in there that I – you know, and they're very different, and I'm a enormous fan for very different reasons. They're like how authentic they are. You know, Eddie is a lunch bucket guy and the ultimate one, and I love his action fighting. I'm a huge mark for Eddie Alvarez. So both guys, I don't know that I'm going to have necessarily a horse in the race in this one. I'm just going to enjoy the awesome fight. I feel like the good thing is I'm not going to be super biased on any personal level because I like them both so much. So that allows me to look at certain things not in a best or a worst or whatever. And so I'm not loving seeing Eddie Alvarez be dismissive of some of these things. Now, he's like, I never felt I don't feel threatened by this guy. That may be true. But I wonder if he's addressing, you know, hey, you can't just talk yourself into viewing this fight a certain way because at some point
– you know you're lying to yourself
if
you haven't properly reviewed it, seen for what it is, and then you arrive at that conclusion. You can't just start at that conclusion. Mm. You have to go through it first.
Right. And so I don't know if that's where he's at.
Yeah.
I know he's
It didn't look like it at the press conference. Yeah. And I know – analyzing press conferences and weigh-ins has become a thing that everyone does now. and so much, like we're saying, truthiness out there and misinformation. But he looked a little intimidated by Connor at the stare down part. But if you're Eddie, you need to separate that stage from the fight stage.
Yes,
and you're not going to beat Connor. Nate can. Yeah. And Nate did in some ways beat Connor on that press conference stage, on that media stage. But Eddie's not going to do that, and he doesn't need to compete there. He doesn't need to try, and he doesn't need to win there. He doesn't need to look good there. He just needs to be able to separate the two things. Yeah. And on fight night, though, that's when I get to do my thing. Mm-hmm. That like it doesn't really matter if he loses the build-up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you should expect that this guy's going to say some things that people are going to laugh at, and who cares? It's irrelevant. It has no bearing on – but you also need to look at the fact that of the 17 men that he knocked unconscious, a lot of them
– Oh, were affected hugely,
But a lot of them said, oh, I'm just going to ignore it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ignore it. Is not an answer to it because, I mean, even in the cage rage days and stuff, you were there watching people break down at the weigh-in. Weigh-ins. No, that's not going to happen, Eddie Alvarez. I assure you.
Yeah.
But what he should be prepared for is this guy actually there is truth to the fact that this man has consistently affected people with the things he says and the actions that he has before a fight.
Yeah.
And most of those guys, some of which are almost as mentally strong as Eddie Alvarez, although Eddie Alvarez is like, you know, a pretty elite of everything.
Yeah.
But some of them lied to themselves and said, oh, it's not going to bug me. It's not going to bug me is not a strategy.
No, no. You know? The only one who has dealt with it is Nate Diaz in the UFC. The only one who handled it. Mm-hmm. And that's because he understands it, knows what it is. And
is a master of it.
So that's why he was able to do it. Chad and Dustin and Jose and a few others before
that. And RDA was already uncertain of how to, you know.
So if you're smart, you're learning from what Nate did. Not, you can't become Nate, but you're learning from what happened there and how you have a choice of whether you're affected or not by that stuff, you know, because you don't – it is just because everyone else was doesn't mean you need to be. You don't need to just ride the momentum. Mm-hmm. What I've seen so far is signs that he is just riding the momentum of it, Eddie, and doing that thing of like pretending he's not affected, but knowing that he is affected, it doesn't make sense that approach.
No,
it's not going to work. So you need to be honest with himself and through his team and everything about you know what the tactics are, what's being done, how it can impact him, and this is like. Obviously, Mark Henry he's come out and kind of said he regretted some of the stuff he had been saying in the back and forth and everything. It kind of went beyond fight promotion, and he regrets it, which is big of him to do that. You know, he's a phenomenal coach,
Marcus. Yeah, and he's brilliant.
Yeah,
he really is. And some of the very things we've talked about of going back. Finding your role in something not working, and accepting it immediately, and looking at he did that with Frankie.
Yeah, he did it.
He did 100%. It full out immediately,
and that's not easy to do.
No. It's powerful if you can do it.
It takes a big guy to I messed up there, or I didn't do the best work, or whatever. That's a sign of someone who's going to. He's already a top coach, and he's going to continue to grow if he has that approach. But he got emotionally caught up in the whole thing,
right?
And then that emotional contagion kind of kicks in, where the team then it's you know Eddie trying to defend his coach and he's taking on that now and that's added pressure and it all that stuff is not good.
And now all that stuff, maybe at one time McGregor was unaware of it and just it was good at it. It was something he did well. Now he's very aware of it. Whether it's something they discuss or something, just little moments where he's gonna feel like oh yeah that's another little thing that's going to – they're going to deal with that and we're just going to go focus on training.
Yeah, because he had a jab at Frankie during the press conference too, which is obviously an indirect jab at Eddie as well because you're saying if Frankie was good enough against Jose, then I'd be fighting him here, but he wasn't good enough to do that, which is a dig at the whole team and everything like that. So there's some clever things that get said. And that – like what we see public – if that's happening behind closed doors where the team or Eddie himself is being affected by that stuff, he needs to address it. He needs to be addressing it already so that it doesn't get on November 12th. It's not going to show itself where a fighter comes out too emotional and gets, you know, gets caught with something that he kind of fell onto.
Yeah, or drove himself onto.
Yeah.
Now, Eddie, there's a couple of things here. One is there are people who use emotion very well or have used it well, but then there's others. Michael Bisping talks about how he mistakenly believed it was valuable and then later found out it wasn't. And so the last 6 months of my life, we've gotten busier here and with doing the breakdowns for the UFC and all these things. And I used to have this feeling of like being in a hurry and like always being go, 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 go. And I thought that that was a valuable feeling.
Yeah.
And it turned out it was a byproduct of what I was doing and actually a harmful feeling. And it takes you a while to kind of figure that out. But when you do, all of a sudden we can kind of get rid of that. Another thing that I may have got it from you. You got an emotion. It hits you. And this is something that Eddie Alvarez could use in this setting. Emotion hits you. And it's a skill you get better at all the time. And you immediately, almost any emotion that is, you think to yourself, is this useful? I'm going to classify it as either useful or not useful.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not useful, we're not going to use it.
Yeah.
I've identified. Oh, I'm mad at McGregor, and wait a second, that's not useful.
Mm-hmm.
That is not useful. Now, it's hard, but you get better at it as time goes on.
Yeah.
You get better at it, and if you can get to the point that not useful. Classifying something in the not useful pile allows you to move on from it. That is a powerful thing. That is a really
very much
powerful
so.
Thing.
And it's at once as well that you realize that it's normal to get mad. You know,
right.
Humans
get mad.
You get mad, and when someone says something directly to you about you, you're going to get mad.
Right.
But then where do you channel that? What do you do with that?
Right.
Obviously he can. He can learn from this. It's interesting that this is like this wasn't really a factor heading into the Nate Diaz rematch, the McGregor mind games, whatever you want to call it. It was just a non-factor.
Yeah.
It didn't matter anymore. It wasn't being discussed. It wasn't there. It wasn't on the table. Now it's back on the table again
because whether I don't know the amount to which they specifically address this, but if I'm John and Conor McGregor, I'm like, oh, we're not going to win this one outright. We're going to do a whole bunch of mentally exhausting battle and either have a draw or a tiny advantage that's negligible for the amount of energy
or
we put
loss.
Into it. Or a tiny loss, like we did last time. So we're not engaging.
Yes.
Yeah. And then now with Alvarez and Frankie and Mark, they're like, oh yeah, there'll be some value. There'll be some value to playing this. It's an interesting thing. I just used to ignore and just brush off any amount of Twitter beefs and trash talk and stuff.
Yeah.
And I still do
because
it's some real lowest common denominator stuff.
Yeah.
Unless it's used as a weapon. And very few of them can do that.
Yeah.
Very, very few. For the most – although the smaller – the less emotional control your opponent has, the easier it is to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
Like if you take that guy that you know at work that just anything will get him going, just say something to him and it'll get him going. And if you're one of those people, is this useful or is this not useful?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not useful, we're going to let it go. You get better at that. It's shocking, but I'm better at that than I was 4 months ago. You know?
And you get to be in charge of how you're feeling and your mindset rather than the momentum or what other people say impacting it. So that's to me is the interesting thing, that people don't seem to be learning from others' mistakes or learning from what's already out there. There's a lot of evidence out there that pretending you're just not, you're fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You can't pretend because you know you're not. So you gotta be honest about it first and be like, oh, this guy's getting to me a little bit. Hang on. Well, what is it that's getting to me?
How
can I do something about
game.
It?
Oh, yeah. He wants me to feel this way. Okay, this is useless emotion. So Eddie, again, one of my very favorites. We're going to look – he at different times – why is he so good? And why does he win these fights that require – and I'm not talking – I'm talking about his whole career. And he finishes people. And he'll push, push, push to the level that you that you'll break and he won't. That there's a certain pigheadedness, a refusal to like where like I'm right and I'm going to prove that I'm right in this and I'm stronger and I'm better. And that same mentality he carries over. He'll be the guy who says there's no such thing as overtraining.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's that same mentality.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, and I don't know that there's an answer to this. Is he incredibly successful and the champion of the world and one of the great fighters ever and one of my favorite fighters because of that or despite it?
Yeah. Well, if you look at where he – like he has changed.
Mm-hmm.
If you think back to Eddie in Bellator, just reckless – like every, he was knocked down pretty much every fight. Like I just remember him getting knocked down, getting back up.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and giving guys chances when they didn't hadn't earned the right to have a chance. You know, like even like obviously the Michael Chandler fights
amazing.
Are incredible fights
because Chandler and him are the same. They're friends now. And
yeah.
There are that we say, oh, you know, they earned each other's respect and you know the, stuff like that. That's actually what that's what's going on there.
Yeah.
They're like, oh shit, I have never met a guy like me, and here's this guy twice like this.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
so that's cool. But
there's loads of fights where he, like the Roger Huerta fight, if you remember, where he won because Huerta quit with his on the stool because of his leg, I think, right?
Yeah.
But he turned that into a difficult fight in some ways. Like he got dropped in that fight and got tagged a few times. And but now it's a little different, and something you'll obviously touch on.
Yeah.
But it has been a little different approach. I don't even know if it was like the cowboy fight was obviously the turning point where he lost that fight and lost it pretty comprehensively.
Yeah. He won round one, though.
Yeah.
But then you couldn't run through
the
that
levels,
wall.
The levels kind of was obvious in that fight on that night. That's not to say if they fight again, it wouldn't be a completely different story. But on that night, and then I think, I don't know if it's since then or if it was a little bit before then, but the approach has changed a little bit where he's not that same completely reckless, you know, high-risk kind of guy.
Yeah, I talked to him. I think it was before the RDA fight. And so if people don't know, I'm built a scale that compares risk-taking and risk-aversion behavior with your willingness and ability to put yourself in situations of harm to win. And I called it the Sapp-Alvarez scale because Bob Sapp will not put himself at any risk ever and will not put himself through any damage ever. And that's his right. He's an athlete and he's a performer and that's how
he'll still put himself in more – This is fighter only.
Right,
You know, the people laughing online put themselves in zero. Zero, minus, negative risk.
Bob Sapp still got danger. kicked in the head and punched in the face by, like, Crow Cop and stuff, So it's like – you pay your money, you do what you want. You want to laugh at Bob Sapp, go ahead. But you're right, 99% of the people couldn't go to that point. They'd argue that, but just walking out there is something very different. But so he was on the bottom, and then Eddie Alvarez was on the top because of his risk-taking.
Who else would you put?
Yeah.
There was no one else you could
If you wanted to call it the Sapp-Lozon scale or the Sapp-Sanchez scale, there are some possibilities, but that's how that
but
got
he was
fought.
The guy.
Yeah. And in the middle range where you don't – not too risk – too much risk-taking behavior or too risk-averse, I called that the championship range. And at that time, all the champions fell within that range when you charted. You're going to see it on our YouTube channel or just Google Sapp-Alvarez scale. And so sometime after that, Eddie Alvarez became in that zone.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not going to claim to have influenced one of my favorite fighters like that. He didn't say it was because of the scale, but it's certainly – he put himself in there and he won the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm re-exploring that for the breakdown, how Conor McGregor's risk-taking behavior has changed. And there's an outlier, Dominic Cruz, man. Dominic Cruz, it could be called the Cruz-Alvarez scale. Like he has built a game. Like, and if you talk to Dominic, I've talked to him a little bit, he says, like, getting his for chumps. They're not for smart people, not for guys like him, not for geniuses. It's for chumps. And somewhere along the line, Eddie moved further to that direction as best he could, and that is the championship range. So, you know, both him and Connor have become champions. Connor is outside of that range a lot of the time. He's outside of the championship range as a risk taker and putting himself in a situation. He took a lot of right hands. And when I go back, and I asked him about that when I talked to him, but when I go back and watch, some of those right hands he takes is because with 100% certainty to deliver his left, he knows that he will take the right.
Yeah, he took a lot against Chad.
Yeah, he did. Big ones.
Yeah.
But it was by design. It's not like, well, I've made this mistake and I get hit. It's like I get hit because of my full commitment against an orthodox fighter to the deep penetrating southpaw, and these guys are good. Before I get this thing back, some of them are going to land right hands on me.
Yeah.
But from he believed that his – and all the evidence agreed with him that his left hand would do more damage than the right hand. And
like
Jose Aldo and him was a 13-second microcosm of that thinking.
Yeah, queen right? against pawn or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And so he would do it. But he doesn't do that quite as much anymore. And even against Diaz, man, some improvements and changes in those first couple of rounds, that hand got back and nothing got through, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at how that changes. But it's going to be another week or 10 days of work on this. But it's a cool thing. But and where's Eddie now? Be fighting the way that he fought Pettis and the way that he fought – who else?
Gilbert.
Gilbert. That's your best plan. Mm-hmm. I mean – a lot of if you can do that, and people who will claim to know what these men are capable of will say, "Oh, Gilbert's a better wrestler than Connor," and you know. So, but that's the right approach. But what are some ways that he gets thrown off that approach? Among them, once you're in Poirier's face, and once you're treating these guys, and once you're playing with things, and once you're destabilizing a guy, or he gets hit and has to be over-aggressive, or any of these things, those are real parts of the game. I think Mark Henry is aware that all of that is real, and I think Eddie and him probably are addressing it as
well.
Real.
I think the Mark Henry thing is a huge factor, because as he's worked with him, his game has kind of changed a little bit too. Like,
yeah, that's true.
You know, they become a little bit more... whatever, less risk taking, risk averse, or whatever.
Yeah.
So that is interesting in itself then as well, where he thinks maybe that he can, like, he just knocked out Dos Anjos, first round knockout.
Yeah.
He's knocked out so many guys over the years.
Oh, he's a finisher. He's a big time finisher.
But he's like, maybe he thinks he's striking then. He can hang with Connor.
Well, they're just words, but he said, "I can do whatever I want."
Yeah. Now,
he might be right.
I doubt it. Right? In terms of striking, if it's a pure striking matchup, I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
That's just my opinion. I'm super biased. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So then, there has to be a bit of. He has to be careful as to what, you know, what the game plan, if he's trying to prove something, or if he thinks he's, you know, he can, like, the knockout of RDA. I've said this before, the RDA fight with Connor, before that fell through as well. It's because RDA had finished Cowboy and finished whatever, that maybe he thinks he's a top-level striker now, and that could be, you know, that false confidence there, and that he thinks he can stand with him when he, I don't think he could have.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in Eddie's team, you need to be sure of the game plan and doing it for the, you know, where you can best win the fight.
Mm-hmm. Pretty exciting fight, though.
It is
for me. I mean,
Eddie is, you know, people don't know him enough. UFC fans, they don't know him enough. They don't know him. He should be everyone's favorite fighter in some ways. You know,
if they've watched his career and his body of work, if you only are the people that are the pay-per-view buyers that start at 400,000, like all those people who 400,000 and under, you're never watching those, but at 400,000 plus one, you're like, oh yeah, that Ronda's fighting, or you know, oh, there's the heavyweight championship of the world. Like, if you're those guys, you have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, there were people, and Eddie doesn't care. This is another good mental strength thing. He didn't care. It had no bearing on him. But there were people who were like, he's the most boring fighter in the world. He's the most exciting fighter in the world.
Yeah.
But also, he changed.
Yeah.
And he changed because for the better. He's the champion of the world now. He's making the money that he wanted to make. He's achieved the things he wants to achieve because he wasn't permanently that Eddie no matter what.
Yeah.
Joe Lauzon is still that Joe Lauzon. But I'll tell you, when you talk to Joe, and it's fascinating because he's a really brilliant guy and he's a really interesting guy. Joe believes with 100% certainty, his math is different than everybody else's, that statistically speaking, he will take less damage fighting this way. He really believes that. He'll tell you, and he'll explain it to you why. And he's a very smart guy. He just sees things a little different. He's going to run a risky – take some risky behavior, but more often than not, he believes that increases his chances of getting you out of there, thus him taking less damage in the long run.
Yeah.
And he knows that that's true for him. So it's not like he's going, well, I just got to go earn myself some money or I want another night of crazy. He's like, this is a intelligent guy with a different view of the world who truly believes this is – that he is risk averse. Mm-hmm. That this is a reflection of his desire to not take damage.
Yeah.
Crazy, right?
It is pretty crazy.
Yeah, but he's cool. He's super cool. And how can you not be a fan? He's made himself a great living as a result.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So many – even just bonuses alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm – like, just to go back what I'm saying, because I don't know if I got it across right. Like, with Eddie, if he'll have to have a game plan to to win this fight that he has to go and execute.
Right.
Right, the way he's been winning fights lately. If he's too emotional, he'll just, maybe resort back to who he really is. Like, that crazy, wild brawler guy who's just going to outwill you and just beat you by just that visceral kind of I want it more, I'm going to take it kind of thing, where I'm not sure that that's the way he can win this fight. You know,
it becomes a percentages thing if in this situation
but this is like people are underestimating him again. Like, he's that perennial underdog kind of guy. They're underestimating him massively. Yeah.
They don't know who he is. A lot of people,
yeah.
Joe Fan. I mean, if you're watching this show, you probably are pretty. You don't end up watching it an hour and 20 minutes.
Maybe you do if you're a Conor fan.
Yeah, sure. Or Ronda fan.
They should familiarize themselves with they've got time between the November 12th.
Yeah.
Go and watch the Eddie Alvarez fights in Bellator.
Yeah, yeah. Or even in Japan.
Or in Dream.
Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like. And then think of how much better, just skill-wise, and he's so rugged and mentally tough. And that ability to dig deep whenever necessary, that's forever in him.
Yeah,
now, and having said that, we know that you must continue to work on that.
Yeah.
But that's so a part of his –
part of who he is. He can access it so much easier than others.
But,
And this is a factor with this fight that I've been thinking about too. Conor has just fought Nate twice.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, the perfect preparation to fight Eddie.
Yeah.
You know, what Eddie brings in terms of that. Conor hadn't fought anyone like Eddie before he fought Nate.
Well,
you know, in terms of that guy who's going to just keep coming at you. You know, it's so hard to finish, so hard to get out. Yeah. Will just take more damage than others will take.
Mm-hmm. True.
And that pressure and everything, you know. I don't know if he fought anyone like that before he fought Nate, and now he's fought Nate back to back, and he's a little and he learned a lot from the first fight, so now he's more aware of it and what it means, and he's a better understanding of what it takes to beat that.
It's true. He also, this would be one of the biggest men he ever fought, and now he's going and he just fought a guy way bigger than this.
Yeah, yeah.
So that also
helps.
That's
true, yeah.
But Nate, his preferred way to end up on the ground is by knocking you down or tricking you. And Eddie can wrestle.
Yeah,
Eddie
that's
truly,
the difference. Yeah.
Truly wrestle.
Yeah.
To a level and with an intensity. Five rounds is interesting. You know, I think people have a real misunderstanding of sort of the term people use still is cardio of Conor McGregor. He and Kavanaugh now have a really high level understanding. And so there is a physical component of training those energy systems to be able to improve them. But there's also a skill development component of how to assess it, manage it. When we had John on this show.
Yeah, get into detail with it. Yeah.
Yeah, about understanding, being able to identify your own heart rate and things. That's a high level thing. Now, so I think Connor's a lot stronger there than people understand, but Eddie will go forever.
Yeah.
And he has better
wrestling than Nate has.
He does.
You know,
better than most people, maybe Mendez, but Mendez is much smaller. Better, I think, than anybody he's ever faced. I think this will be – if ever there's going to – oh, how's he going to do against wrestlers? This – here it is. This is – and again, I don't know that people understand how good Eddie Alvarez is, but now it'll be undeniable. This is that test.
Yeah. So it's a really tough matchup, but like I think it's an easier matchup than it would have been if he went straight to fight Eddie without the Nate Diaz experiences.
Yes.
You know, because – the understanding of the conditioning and the fitness the cardio is different now. Eddie said something interesting a few times. He's referred to it a few times. It's not just a throwaway comment.
Gasses
after 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And has nothing left out and will quit at the first sign of adversity and all that kind of thing. So that's something that's part of his approach part of his psyche heading into this fight. He said it enough times for it to become a thing that you can see he's really believing it. But a problem with that I have, Eddie then is depending on Conor to break.
Yeah.
Which, you know, what happens in the 9th minute if Conor's fresher than ever, the 10th minute, comes out in the 3rd round and is dancing around the place? Because that you can't need him to break for you to go and do your thing. You should want, like, if it takes 25 minutes, then I'm going to bring it for 25 minutes.
And he can. And I suspect he will. I don't think he'll fold up his tent if Conor starts elevating it at that point. But what it also says, that is a reflection of projecting a fixed mindset on that guy.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, one of the biggest things that I always come back to is why would you think that with hard work somebody wouldn't get better at something? I come back to that because of my own personal love of that truth. But also because it's relevant in everything you do in the world, not just for yourself, but what you expect will change in the environment. If you're competing in an environment, everybody's going to get better in that environment. If you're learning something, that thing will change.
Yeah.
And if Eddie is looking at this and saying, that is that guy, then he's probably wrong. Just like if you're looking at Ronda and you say, this is what we need to do to fight Ronda. Well, what if she's not that thing?
Yeah.
What if she's 13 months of evolution from what you thought she was and what you prepared for?
Yeah, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Then you're in serious trouble. And you're being like when Frankie tried to beat Jose. Frankie was turning up ready to beat the Jose he'd already fought.
Right.
And he wasn't ready for this Jose.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, that's why when Eddie's talking, and I know what he's doing, and it makes sense to put it out there. Mm-hmm. He's
in the hopes that it'll bother him, or he'll overthink it, or he'll question it at minute 7.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Maybe he will. But you can get him to do that. Maybe you can say something to him at minute 8. Hey, you're slowing down. Maybe you can, but maybe you can't.
But as long as he's willing to go 25 hard minutes, then that's where...
At least we know that.
He will. Yeah. He will be ready to do that. And just, like, just keep focusing on himself and what he's got to do. Yeah. That's his job.
So I've made friends with a lot of Conor McGregor fans over the years. The last couple of years, I've named his primary weapon. I've studied him probably deeper than almost anyone. I'm a fan. I liked him when I met him. All of those things. I had the first question at the press conference. He told me how he's going to knock out Jose. So I have a work relationship with him. And I can't think of anybody else that he'd be fighting right now that there's a chance come the day of that I'll be cheering against him.
I know
that very hesitantly because my, you know, friends in environments, even in social media and whatever, if they thought I was turning on Conor McGregor, who is also one of my favorite fighters, I could get a landslide of people going after me. But Eddie Alvarez, to me, is just something very, very special.
Yeah.
Very
Arturo
special.
Arturo Gatti, I had that when I was growing up,
watching
his fights. They're so similar, I think, those kind of guys.
Yeah. There's something in there where you can admire it and you can see it. And then I've been told stories of somebody working with him and he mentioned a book to them. And they said, wow, that sounds interesting. And 2 days later when they worked with him again, he brought them that book. I've heard personal Eddie Alvarez stories as well. Plus, I'm a Michael Chandler is a friend and the way he speaks about him. So you end up developing a real – and this is my job, but I'm in this environment every day. These are the people I learn from in my life. So I'm going to be – it's going to be a hard one to watch from a fan perspective, but a killer one to watch from an analysis.
It's a great fight. It, like, I just like I wish people understood how great a fight it is, like the casuals.
Yeah.
You know, and cuz it's Eddie Alvarez against Conor McGregor.
That's
it's a
insane.
Bit of a dream matchup when you think
insane.
About what they the styles they have and how you know the way they go about it, and like you can say what you want about Conor, but he brings it every time. You know?
He does.
And Eddie the same, so it's a very exciting fight.
There is a certain amount of you know, I don't know if Coach John or Connor have ever looked at this so specifically. It's something they've touched on, but that there is an older style of fighter that they believe Jose Aldo was that. Forward pressure with a certain kind of strikes, wrestling applied a certain way.
Wrestler boxer.
Yeah, wrestler boxer, exactly. And that they have absolutely developed something that is a greater than sign if done properly. If that is true, we get to find out deeper if that's true. It's true against Mendez. Was it going to be true against Aldo? Was it going to be true against RDA? We don't know. It felt like there was some chances. But this is the biggest test of that belief that you have developed a level of martial arts evolution that is kind of making the wrestler boxer obsolete. This is the biggest test you can find probably. I can't think of anybody that is a better prototype wrestler boxer with all of the intangibles and all of the personal attributes that Eddie Alvarez has.
Yeah, and that's why it's so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, me too. I have no idea how long we've been here. An hour and 5 minutes, so we still got a bit of time. I don't know when we'll get back together. It's been closer to 2 weeks lately because of our schedules. But what else? Is there anything else you want to talk about? In our minds?
Yeah, well, going backwards instead of going looking ahead. Bisping and Henderson, right?
Yeah, awesome.
It was incredible.
Yes, it was.
You know, it was amazing, and what a fight it was, and back and forth, and it had everything. But Bisping then said something after about the jitters that he had been feeling in the build-up, and people were shocked by that.
Yeah.
And I'm always shocked that people are shocked by that. Mm. Just because I know, obviously, fighters and the way they prepare and get to work with them on that side of things. Everyone's feeling them, you know? Mm. And some fights, it's more than others. And for Bisping, it's obviously understandable why it was a little more on this one.
Dan, the knockout.
Yes.
His first title defense, judgment, all of
this. A 47-year-old guy, you know, all this, their first title defense, at home.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Of course he was feeling jitters. Like, the amount of stuff afterwards of people that were surprised and you know, can't believe that he was, that he said that, or another level can't believe that he was thinking that way and that he was feeling those jitters. Of course he was. Like, You would be too. Everyone would be too. It doesn't make sense that you're not. But the thing was, he had been honest about them with himself, and that he was feeling them.
And he was still being honest right there.
Yeah. Acknowledging that he was feeling them, but still went and executed. And yes, he got caught twice, and other guys would have been stopped both times. But he has that thing about him as well.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's not just his. Like, everyone refers to his cardio in those situations, and that's a part of it. But he has that thing about him where if he can fight, he'll fight.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool that he said that afterwards. That makes my work easier.
Right.
When someone like him, who's just done that in a fight like that, who's a guy like he is talking about being open about the jitters he was feeling. That makes it easier for other guys to be open about it too, even if it's in private, just with me.
Yeah, at the very least, you could run that for them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Or tell them the story and use him as an example.
Yeah,
and it's the ones who don't admit it, I think. And I mean, Greg Jackson is pretty close with Cowboy as his coach, but I think as a friend. And he always talks about how Cowboy is the example of a guy who fully gets them, fully admits them, embraces them, and goes towards it. I think a lot of people, when they watch, and I'm always on about how all what we can learn from fighting, and I really believe that. I really, a lot of my love and appreciation for the martial arts in the last few years has become because there's so many lessons in them, you know, as much as that, a million other reasons. But you know, most people will never go fight a guy in a cage. And even if they did that, most of them will never be in the UFC. Most of us will never do that. But if you can look at Michael Bisping and see that he had the jitters and he was nervous and went and did it anyways,
you understand that these aren't some weird, special, unique, rare people. They have the same feelings of fear that everybody has from all kinds of little things.
Yeah.
The only difference is they go towards the fear.
Yeah.
They deal with it. They accept it. They realize it's human. And then they prepare to move towards it and do it anyways. And that's what courage is. It's not being scared. It's being scared and doing it anyways, you know?
Yeah, and I remember when I was younger, because I used to get nervous before games and stuff, like bigger games or whatever, when I was playing football. And I'd be thinking of looking forward to the day when I don't feel that, thinking it was a bad thing and everything. And then looking at guys on TV that I'd look up to, like other like players on TV, thinking, you know, there's something special about them that they're able to do that without feeling. I just assumed, I put it on them that they don't feel that way, and you know. And then as obviously I get older and I realize, you know, I still played well even though I felt that way beforehand. I was just figuring out for myself, and then it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a thing. And then obviously when I get into this work, and I get to understand it on such a deep level, and then getting to work with fighters, every single one of them. Is feeling that way. Mm-hmm. It's like the when you watch an illusion.
Yeah.
And then someone shows you how they did it. You can't see the illusion anymore.
Right.
It's not there anymore. It's completely unveiled. All you can see is how they did it.
Yeah.
So it's the same with thinking people are special when they're performing at the top level. They're not. You know, they're feeling the same stuff you would be feeling too, but they've, you know, they're handling it and still doing it. Because like speaking of the Blue Jays, it's at that game on Sunday against Texas, and it's such a huge atmosphere in there, and it's such a huge game. Uh-huh. And Aaron Sanchez is up first pitch. Jeez. and the 50,000 people going crazy, and you know that Canada is watching, and you know, the whole
still just
crazy.
A baseball game, but there's all this other stuff.
Of course, he's feeling the nerves and stuff, and there was a few people sitting beside me, and they were talking about how it's incredible that he could do that. They'd be feeling so shaky now; they can't imagine. I was like, he is too.
Yeah, he is feeling
that way too, but he's going to manage that. Mm. He's going to get it in check, and he's going to go and execute his pitches. You know, that's the same thing with everything, really. You're going to feel nervous before you do it, but that's not a reason not to try, not to do it.
Yeah, and it becomes a reason to do things in your life sometimes. You know, because the more you do it, he is feeling the same things, but he has all this evidence, all this
He can trust himself more than the nerves. That's what I talk about with fighters, where you've earned the right to feel the trust on the night, only if you're putting in the work. You can't magic that. You can't just feel confident or feel the trust. But if you've been putting in the work and you've been dedicated and you put in the real work, then you've earned the right to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. And you can earn the right to trust yourself way more than any nerves and doubts that naturally come along. Those things naturally happen. But the trust isn't natural. You have to earn that. You have to work for that. So it is a bit more special. And once you have that balance in check and you understand nerves and doubts are natural, they're just there. Trust and confidence is earned. Mm-hmm. And so then you have the balance in check, and then you go and you can really trust yourself to execute.
I cut weight with Joe Riggs once, and I think he was at fight 40-something or maybe more. And he said in detail, he said it's exactly the same, but he's familiar with the taste now. I remember him putting it. He's familiar with the taste of it. And I thought about that after. I was fighting on that card too. And I thought about it after, and then my typical, you know, analyzing and looking for deeper answers. And there actually is a taste, and the taste is aluminum.
You
actually are tasting aluminum in your mouth, because a part of adrenaline, one of the byproducts of it is aluminum, and you actually taste. So, and it's also why, how many fighters have you been around after they fight and they have the worst breath in the world? Ever notice that? Or any sport after they compete, everybody's just like, they got the dragon, and it's aluminum. And so there is a taste, and so although Joe was just, I think, just sort of
saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you actually think about it, you can you can recognize these things and see them as normal.
That's just one of the symptoms.
Oh, I got the taste again. Yeah. Oh, my fingertips feel strange.
Yeah.
Oh, and there are only some of them. And on some nights, you'll have other weird ones. I've told you the story of my phantom toothache. Oh, that was something I wanted to tell you. My wife just went to an audition, and she doesn't have this problem on any regular basis anymore because she's done it so much. But it's so common for singers who have auditions to lose their voice in the mm-hmm. days before. It's so unbelievably common.
It's self-handicapping.
Mm-hmm. And then and on some level, they don't know why. And I've seen – there was one just this week. She was on Facebook, does anybody have any answers? I've lost my voice. I have a big audition tomorrow. And and even when you look at it after – so Erica, who now watches the show and I've talked to her about these ideas – she was talking to her, and then she was like, oh, no, I just lost – she talked to her about, oh, you should think about it. Sometimes stress will cause it, or, really do some reading on that kind of stuff. And she goes, no, I just was singing too much when I was teaching all week. Okay. Well, don't teach all week. You know what I mean? It's a form of self-handicapping that you can go to it and say, if I was on that day, I'd have got that job.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I got sick. And so it seemed – it's a very specific example of something we talked about with Sage Northcutt feeling sick as a potential explanation.
Rockhold a little bit.
Or Rockhold going into it or these guys that it's very, very acute in singing because it's – you're using this specific thing and it's always that one that goes.
Yeah.
They get colds for big auditions.
And it's understandable. That would happen, but you can get to the point before that where you're being honest about the like as Biss being put it, the jitters you're feeling and how important this is and the pressure you're feeling of it, and then break it down for what it is you're actually asking yourself to go and do. Because if you're going to try and get the part, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's hard to do
for sure.
To get the part, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
But can you go and sing in this room in front of these people? Yeah, you can do that.
And can you go in the best state, rested and focused and excited and present? You can do that.
Yeah. So that's where you're evaluating what you're asking yourself to do gets important as well.
Mm-hmm. I think we got to send Chase home.
Anything
you were looking forward to? Anything we should sort of lay a nugget for?
We'll get more in before 205.
Yeah.
So there's more fights in that card,
too. Wonderboy and Thompson we're going to talk about. Wonderboy and Woodley, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, there's some great stuff on that card. So we'll get into that. We'll do a full 205 preview or something.
Yeah. And after you watch this, just hit us up on Twitter, David Mullins MMA on Twitter and Robin Black MMA on Twitter. Send us some questions and stuff like that. And go to David's website, davidmullinssportspsychology.com. Anything else?
That's about it.
Thanks for hanging with us. And we'll see you guys next time.